AARP Indiana, an information resource for Hoosiers about the CARE Act, providing support for caregivers when their loved one enters and leaves the hospital. More at action.aarp.org/incarecard.
The civil rights bill dies in the state Senate. Why was no vote taken? Speaker Bosma declares the bill dead in the House, and it's already an issue in the race for governor. That plus proposed tax hikes, the prospects for a presidential battle here, White River beaches, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 5, 2016. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the civil rights bill died in the state Senate without a vote. Author Travis Holdman told the Senate that he was unable to find a compromise that would permit the bill to pass, mostly because there was a lack of support for the idea of civil rights protections for transgender men and women. Knowing that, Senate leaders chose to avoid a lengthy and emotional debate. Here is Senate President Pro Tem David Long, followed by Holdman.
They just didn't want to go through all the pain of having all this discussion if, in fact, in the end, the bill was not going to move.
No matter what I do, no matter what I propose, I cannot move these walls that are on the right and the left hand because nobody wants to give.
We know that there's hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers that face discrimination every day, and we want Indiana to be seen as a welcoming place.
And that's Chris Paulson of Freedom Indiana, a civil rights group that promises to keep fighting for a new law. Was that the best way to handle the civil rights bill? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, did that bill deserve a vote?
It clearly deserved a vote. I mean, when you ask if it's the right way to handle it, it depends on what your objective is. Their objective all along was to make sure that the Tea Party was appeased. That was the objective of the Republican. When you look at the majorities they have in both houses, you're telling me that David Long couldn't get 16 of his people, to vote for civil rights for everybody?
Well,
16 out of 40?
Well, the bill as it stood transgender, and he couldn't get the 10 necessary Democrat votes in that scenario.
He could get the 10 necessary Democratic votes if there was no discrimination on that point. And the point is he had to come up with 16 on the Republican side to guarantee no discrimination against transgender, and he didn't do it.
Okay.
They never intended to have this bill pass. They are more worried about the Tea Party than they are the fact that Indiana discriminates, and they're happy with that.
Well, if they are worried about the Tea Party, this may have backfired because David Long now has a primary opponent who presumably is coming at him from the right. Did this work out well? He said that there would be a discussion. He didn't promise a vote. Did this work out well for him?
Well, I give him unbelievable credit for trying to advance this issue. He said we would have a discussion of this issue last year. They did that. They had a five-hour public hearing on the matter in committee. And I think Senator Holdman also took a lot of courage for both of those gentlemen to try to do what they did, because the bill in its form in 344, even with the transgender taken out, would have made a major advancement for civil rights in Indiana if it had been passed in its form.
Well, it had new protections for gays, lesbians, and bisexuals.
Yeah. And when there was never going to be 26 Republican votes for that bill in its form. And if you're not going to get any of the 10 Democrats, then there clearly weren't any votes to get this done. So for him to pull the plug on this at that point was the right thing to do. because it would, just would have made the rest of the session even more difficult. And there are 800 bills filed, and there's something like 400 of them left, and there's a lot of work to be done.
For months in the build-up to the session, you said on this show repeatedly you thought this would get solved.
I really did. I thought their effort was an honest one. I do not besmirch their motives here, because I think they seriously tried to get it done. And for Travis Holdman to carry this bill showed a lot of courage, and he made a heck of an effort. And I think that David Long and some others really wanted to see something happen here. And the fight that they had in caucus, as I understand it, was a knockdown, drag-out kind of an affair. And at the end of the day, they decided they couldn't get it done.
I want to pick up on that point, because this is something we've seen for the last couple of years. With the supermajorities in both houses, they're having knockdown, drag-out debates in caucus, and then they come to the floor and there's nothing. Is the public being left out of this?
Yeah.
Had a five-hour debate.
Well, I think the public is making sure that it's inserting itself in the process, at least those factions of the public who are very interested on either side of this. I don't think you can say that they have been the wallflowers or the proverbial shrinking violets with the petitions and the very high-profile rallies and the radio spots and so forth. So there is, I suppose, you could always have more public input. I mean, that's the nature of the process, I would advocate. But John predicted this, actually. The caucus, the Republican Senate caucus, must have been watching last week's show, because this was his suggestion. And actually, for all the people saying what's victory, what's defeat, I guess I'm out of this because if, in fact, what failed to get action on the floor strikes me that would not have been ultimately satisfactory for any party.
No.
Right.
On either side. The people pushing for civil rights said that they would have accepted that at the moment because it would have advanced the debate.
But,
it would have
right.
kept the
but,
bill alive.
But Jim, because of the religious exemptions that were created in it, it might have muddied the waters, I think, and I may be a minority of one.
It would have.
In some ways, I think there's the notion of cleaning the slate and starting over is of some value.
Is there? Is there value in cleaning the slate at this point?
Look, the speaker
Come on, you predicted
made
it last week.
The speaker made it very clear that he had no appetite for the bill that was moving in the Senate. So there's that has to be considered in this too. What this exercise showed is that there is a deep schism in the General Assembly, particularly among the Republicans, but I think among all. Because you had an attempt to divide the coalition that's for additional protection, and you couldn't appease those who are trying to find the balance or those who are against additional protection. So they couldn't thread the needle. That's plain and simple what happened. What you do is you revert back to what's in place now, and you have the fault line for the election going forward. And it really, I think, ends up mostly on the governor's doorstep rather than the legislature.
All right, we're going to get to more of that in just a second, but time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, did the state Senate take the easy way out by avoiding a civil rights vote? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it really doesn't matter. Last week's question, should state house staffers be permitted to carry guns? 18% said yes, 58% said no, 24% said only if the public can too. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. All of this means that there will be no consideration of the civil rights bill in the Indiana House. When I asked if the bill is dead, House Speaker Brian Bosma responded this way.
Oh, I presume it is, because there's no pending bill in the House, and it doesn't seem to be subject matter that would be appropriate to add to a bill without a hearing. So I would say yes.
Mike McDaniel, Democrats say they want to keep the issue alive. Can they?
Well, sure. There are 151 Senate bills that have now moved to the House, and I'm sure they're scouring every one of those to look at content, to see if there are any opportunities to offer amendments, to do the kinds of things they need to do, try to keep it alive. When you're in a super minority like they are and you're trying to look for every opportunity to score political points, I mean, that's what you got to do, and that's what they're going to do. And I look for them to try to do that. The only problem they've got, when I look around the state, there are probably only three districts where this might actually be the kind of issue in a legislative race that could determine the outcome. And out of all of the districts, the 100 districts that are up, that's not much to go on. And in three of those, two of those are open seats, which make it even more difficult.
Which makes it even more incomprehensible why the Republicans didn't do what was right. What was right was four words
and
a comma. Four words. Well,
it was never
going to
happen.
Do it.
That
they
was
can
a non-starter.
Oh, that's right. Because you're
non-starter.
Your party or your supermajorities in both houses are in favor of discrimination.
No,
that's
in favor
the reason.
Of religious freedom.
Well, it's not religious
yes, it
freedom.
Is. Well, it's
that's
the
a shibboleth that you put up there in order to avoid admitting
freedom
the fact.
Freedom of conscience.
Avoided to avoid admitting the fact that you tolerate discrimination.
One of the things that David Long and Brian Bosma are both saying now is that 40% of the state is under non-discrimination laws that are local ordinances.
Right.
And they say that by the time they get back next year, it'll probably be above 50%. They're sending the signal to local mayors and city councils, do this on your own.
Actually, I think they're sending the signal to the proponents of the non-discrimination language. Show us that you can get this kind of language passed in communities all over the state, and then that gives them the ability to move it through the legislature. I think that's what the leadership is saying. Show us you can get these passed in local communities more so than you already have. And to get to that 50%, it's going to take a lot more of the ordinance than they currently have because the big cities are all covered. Now you have to move into the smaller towns.
And one of the things they're saying is that in the big cities...
Show us.
But they're also saying that's where the economic development activity is. And so part of the suggestion is maybe this can't be done in some parts of the state.
Well, that's certainly one aspect of this. But you also, if you look at the 42%, I think that's the number I've heard Brian Bosma use, that already... those communities that already have protections. As the bill, I believe the most recent version would have allowed those ordinances to remain in place, but would not have allowed anything after December 31st of last year to be enacted. And I think that, from a legal standpoint, is problematic because, again, new councils come into office and their hands are effectively tied, even if the neighboring community had the prerogative to pass something. And I think that... it's probably not as big a factor as what John described, but I think there are those who say this doesn't align well with the notion of home rule.
This issue is going to be out there. It's going to be out there through this general election because the legislature is behind the public on this issue, and the public is feeling increasingly strongly about Indiana's reputation as a place where it's okay to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender. And it is not acceptable to the public. So it's going to cost.
I think we're absolutely going to find out if that's true or not in this election campaign. And I don't think you're going to find that the results are what you think they are, and especially a lot of rural districts across the state of Indiana.
Well, you've got gerrymandering to protect it, and that's right.
Well,
that's what it is.
Civil rights is already an issue in the race for governor, where both major party candidates filed to be on the ballot this week. John Gregg showed up at the Secretary of State's office this morning to sign his name and officially launch his campaign. He started with a call for civil rights protections based on sexual orientation and gender identity, the concept that didn't get a vote in the state Senate.
This is an issue that was created last year really by the governor. I don't blame anybody other than the governor's office on this issue.
A few hours later, Mike Pence showed up for the same purpose, and when asked about the civil rights bill that died yesterday, gave this answer.
I believe in the legislative process, and I respect the outcome of the deliberations on that legislation.
Gregg made it clear that civil rights and the RFRA crisis are high on his list of campaign issues.
We're in this situation with this economic disadvantage that we've given, this PR nightmare, but more importantly, this economic disadvantage this has given us because of the governor's lack of leadership.
I think that'll be up to the people of Indiana about what's a major issue or not.
And the governor made it clear that he wants to talk about the economy, jobs, and education. John Ketzenberger, can Mike Pence continue to avoid this issue?
I don't think so. I think that by the fact that the legislature did not do anything this year, the fact that the ground remains the same as it was before, and the fact that this was really, despite being a piece of legislation that moved through the process and got to his desk has always been perceived as the governor's issue. He's going to have to address this. He had an opportunity when the legislation was in process this year, and he said in his State of the State speech something that really didn't say one way or another what he thought. He just said, I won't allow any discrimination. Well, he didn't take a lead role in that, and so now it's still in his wheelhouse. He still has to answer for it to the public and the voting public, I think.
All right, 4 years ago on social issues, John Gregg and Mike Pence weren't very far apart. Now there's a significant contrast here. How much does John Gregg lean on that?
He's clearly leaning on it a lot. I mean, I don't think he's had any significant public event, whether it was the filing or other sorts of activities where he has not brought up that distinction, and has talked about the evolution in his thinking. And that probably does give political cover to a lot of office holders and candidates it happens to be true. There has been a dramatic shift in opinion in all sectors.
Yeah.
So it probably would offer cover for those who normally might say, you know, I'm not somebody who puts my finger into the wind. I have views that are set one way or the other.
So will there be Republicans who will cross over to John Gregg because of this issue?
I don't know that it'll cross over because of this issue. John Gregg, it was an interesting response. John said, I would get everybody around the table and we would have come up with a compromise.
Republican supermajorities would make that difficult.
And then he started with that. Then he said, he followed that up immediately by saying, but only four words in a comma will work. Well, wait a minute, John. Did you forget that you were communicating with your newfound base, or are you trying to do the Sanborn two-step? Now, you can't say you're going to put everybody in a room and find compromise, but the only thing that will work is four words in a comma. So, you know, John's got to start getting his story right. He's having trouble transforming between his old John Gregg and the new John Gregg in this issue. That's exactly what he said.
I understand what he said, and he's right. That's what fixes this whole thing.
Compromise, but
the problem
only four words in a comma is all acceptable.
You don't compromise on civil rights.
Said he would.
He said he'd get everybody in a room, okay? You don't compromise on civil rights any more than you compromise when the civil rights movement dealt with the racial issues. You just can't do it. What's interesting about this is John Gregg has obviously evolved, as all of us have evolved in our thinking about this issue and become more aware of it. Mike Pence has not. Mike Pence has been in favor of discrimination all his public life.
That's
he has reiterated it over and
That's
over again.
True.
He opposed the marriage. He opposed protections on employment. He opposed all kinds of ways of protecting gay, lesbian, and transgender. And he hasn't
your question, Jim,
he votes in favor of
your
it.
Your question, Jim, will this cause some Republicans to cross over and vote for John Gregg? You've set it up as an A or B multiple choice question.
Yes.
You're forgetting C, which is Republicans may sit
home
or avoid that race, which
there
is another factor as well.
There are a lot of issues to cross over against Mike Pence anyway.
Moving on, another controversial issue survived the first half of the General Assembly. It's the House Republican road funding plan that increases the gasoline tax by a nickel and hikes the cigarette tax by a dollar, and now also includes a small cut in the state income tax. The Republicans defeated the Democratic proposal this week on a vote of 26-66, despite these arguments from Dan Forrestal and Scott Pelath.
House Democrats feel that the tax increases that are included in House Bill 1001 currently are unfair to Hoosiers.
When you're talking about new revenue, the average citizen will first say to you, okay, but you got to use the money you've already taken from us first.
John Schwanes, is that bill dead on arrival in the Senate?
I'll quote the expert known as conventional wisdom. And I think conventional wisdom dictates that it is, because normally you would not try to enact any kind of tax increase in an election year with voters going to the polls only a few months away. However, this is structured clearly with a bit of a carrot in it, with a modest tax cut that would not necessarily offset it, but in some ways
it would offset it after 8 years.
But the challenge is you have 27 members out of 50 in the Senate who have taken some version of Grover Norquist's no new tax
pledge. And one of the things the Speaker wants to do is make sure that more don't do that before we get to November. Yeah.
Well, and the other question is, you know, then we'll get into the game. Even if 27 have taken it, then you can play, is this a tax increase or not, or is this a user fee? So that really goes out the window in some sectors.
Will it get a hearing?
Yes, I think it will. I think it's already been scheduled for the Senate next committee. And, you know, whether or not the chairman decides to give it a vote is another question. But I do think that it'll get a hearing, and I do think that it's going to be the centerpiece of a lot of conversation between the House and the Senate as we get toward the end of the session.
Yeah, I think it's going to get a hearing. I don't think if it comes out of the Senate, it's going to look anything like what it looks like now. I mean, it's like a Christmas tree. It's so silly. I mean, 8 years for a tax cut that'll give the lowest taxpayers $30 a year and the highest $3,000 a year. It's a crazy system.
The gas tax increase only costs them $25 a
year. The gas tax, I'm for the gas tax increase.
None of the House Democrats are.
I know, but I'm for the gas tax increase and using some of the surplus. What I think makes no sense fiscally is to borrow for maintenance. It's like borrowing to paint a room in your house. It's crazy when you've got a surplus like that. We have to increase revenue for a long-term funding source for our roads, and it should be tied to the gas tax.
There will be a road funding bill of some kind, maybe two that come out of
the Indiana session. State Senate passed unanimously this week, about $450 million worth of new road money, and when you combine that with the $430 million of local road money in the Hirschman bill and some others that are going to come out of there, you're going to have over $1 billion of new money for roads. But it's not going to be the permanent fix. You're not going to get the permanent fix until next year.
All right, moving on. The Iowa caucuses produced a pair of surprises this week, and it could be good news for Indiana voters. Hillary Clinton just barely won the Democratic caucus. Bernie Sanders described the results as, quote, a virtual tie. Clinton won 49.9% of the vote, and Sanders won 49.6%. On the Republican side, Ted Cruz is the upset winner. Donald Trump came in second with Marco Rubio a close third. Mike McDaniel, do those results improve the odds that the Indiana primary might make a difference in the nomination process?
I really don't think you're going to know until mid-March or maybe even late March. We still haven't had anybody go to the polls and vote in this presidential year.
Happens Tuesday in New Hampshire, right?
We had a caucus, but nobody's actually gone to vote yet. Until we get some primaries behind us in the, as they call it, the SEC primary, I think it's going to go a long way in deciding both of those races for the Republicans and the Democrats. I don't think we're going to know until mid-March. I will still be surprised if we're in play in May.
Because 40 states either caucus or
we're
vote.
We're late. There's no question about that. But I think the potential is there for the Republicans still to be in play. I don't expect that the Democrats will still be in play by then.
You think that once they
once we get past New Hampshire and start moving into South Carolina and Nevada and all that, I expect that Hillary Clinton will sew up the nomination. But I think you're going to see diverse forces in there. And Mike's right. When you get into primaries, particularly in places like New Hampshire, I don't think Ted Cruz is going to sell as well up there as he did to this 65% of the voting caucuses in Iowa who are self-identified evangelicals. It's going to be a different ball game.
Does Indiana need to change its process?
Yes.
Ann Delaney says yes.
what do you think?
You know, I think it would be nice if Indiana voters had more of a chance to be influential in this. As a political junkie, I would like to see that. But practically speaking, I don't think it makes a lot of sense, and the legislature is not too inclined to move it up, given that
the legislature doesn't want to spend the money, but they're not calculating in what it would do for the Indiana economy.
But you're talking about a separate primary, but it's not because
they're not going to move
the May primary. They're not going to move
the May
primary.
They'll never
have a separate
primary.
Yeah,
no, there's
that's
no
the only thing I was going to say. Yeah, as long as incumbent lawmakers realize that they need to get home and campaign because their challengers are doing the same thing. And they're stuck in Indianapolis in the proceedings of the General Assembly. That can't happen. And I'm not sure that the economic pop, unless you're trying to move it against national party rules to in front of New Hampshire, which I don't think they could do.
That's not going to happen.
No. So I don't think the bang would be there for the buck.
Only winners are TV stations.
They'll make money. They'll make money.
Finally, what do you think of the idea of a beach in downtown Indianapolis? It's part of a plan to attract visitors to the White River over the next year. Tourism leaders will discuss potential changes, including new restaurants, cafes, and a beach. Visit Indy leaders say they'll work with environmental experts to ensure the water is clean enough. Chris Gall of Visit Indy says it would be similar to the riverfront beaches in Paris.
could replicate that in a way that's sustainable and conducive for visitation and residents to come and congregate during the warmer months. And that could be something that pretty affordably could be done and we think could be an attractant for drawing in more visitors.
And Delaney, any desire to swim in the White River?
No. But, you know, I think if they have the river cleaned up, I've always thought the river property was underutilized in this town. I think it could be a very, very attractive location for a bunch of different things, but they have to clean the water first.
And make us the Paris of the Midwest.
What's wrong with that?
You like this idea?
I think Ann gave the right answer. I think there's a lot of potential there. I'm not sure beach is one of them.
Well, somebody who, maybe I'm the only person on the panel who has swum in White River.
That explains it.
It does. I was going to say, in 1982, they used to have the WNAP raft race, and most people ended up swimming along the rafts. And it hasn't affected me one bit, clearly, right?
All right. Before we go, we need to mark the passing of former Governor Edgar Whitcomb. He died this week at the age of 98 after living an extraordinary life. That's Indiana Week in Review. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.